Hello, and welcome to Revolutionize Your Love Life. Do you want to know more about love relationships, what makes them work, how to create the one of your best dreams? Do you want to be in a really healthy, juicy love relationship? In these podcasts, we will give ideas and practical advice to light your way. Whether you're looking for a love partner, already in a relationship you wish could be better, or leaving one that has run its course, there will be something to inspire, empower, and support you. Revolutionize Your Love Life is a fortnightly podcast where you will access the knowledge and wisdom of love experts and relationship coaches from across the world to help you find true fulfillment in love. I am your host, Heather Garbutt. Welcome. Hello, everybody. I'm here today to talk with a magnificent woman who is really addressing some of the significant issues of our time. Today, we're going to talk about porn addiction and its effects on marriage and other relationships, compulsive masturbation, dopamine dependency, and using technology to heal the brain. There really is an answer to this. So I've invited Dr. Trish because we have a mutual client who has had porn addiction issues, and they have achieved amazing results, and it's affected both their own life and their anxiety, their inner world, as well as the quality of their relationship with their spouse. This is just wonderful work. Please, Dr. Trish, tell us all about porn addiction.
Sure. Yeah, I'm so glad to be here because my motivation is to help. It's primarily men right now, but increasingly more women are using pornography for mood regulation. We can get there in a minute. But, you know, ultimately, my mission on helping men is to help them be able to have healthy, loving relationships, because porn really does preclude them from being able to do that. So relationships, whether that be a coupleship or a partnership, or even relationships with parents, with friends, with children, you know, they're all impacted negatively by porn use. So I'm on a mission to help people heal their brains and then get back to, you know, the loving relationships that people want and they deserve.
Can you tell me a little about how all of those different qualities of relationship are affected by porn use?
Yeah, sure. Starting with a primary relationship, research shows that there is significant damage to a primary relationship, you know, a coupleship, a marriage, boyfriend, girlfriend, a committed relationship, whatever, you know, we want to call that. But anyways, what happens is relationship dissatisfaction increases because of porn use. And it's very complex. It's not simple, the reason that this happens, but to put it as simply as possible, what happens is a person's brain, when they consume pornography, gets linked to very high levels of dopamine when they're consuming porn, usually which is coupled with compulsive masturbation. So basically, their brain gets flowing a lot of dopamine. It's called a supernormal stimulus. It can't be found anywhere in a healthy way in the world. So that unreality of porn becomes the most pleasurable thing to the person, which leads towards addiction. They want more and more of that good feeling. So then what happens is now it's time to get back into your relationship, and especially your sexual relationship, and your partner could never possibly compete with the dopamine levels. So one thing I want people to know in a relationship, this is a dopamine dependency. It's not about what the people look like on the screen. It's not about what they're doing. It's about the amount of dopamine that's produced in a person's brain and nervous system due to that supernormal stimulus. But inherently, what it does is relationship dissatisfaction goes up. A person's own self-esteem, and especially their sexual self-esteem, tanks. The way that they view their partner decreases, so they find their partner less attractive. I mean, that alone is so damaging to relationships. But then on top of that, we layer intimacy, dysfunction, difficulty connecting at an intimate level, because it becomes about physical pleasure, not about emotional intimacy. And honestly, if we're going to go really down to the core, what we know is that there's neurological dysregulation. when porn use is in the mix. So a person's brain changes. It becomes more dysfunctional, which leads them to difficulty with emotional regulation, dealing with emotions, especially negative ones, which means they need to continue to go back to porn, seemingly to feel good, but honestly, to not feel bad.
Right. So it's like any other addiction. So it's used to regulate feelings. But I want you to, if you would, because I'm not sure that everybody knows what dopamine does and what it's about, what its usual function is.
Sure. So dopamine, they call it the molecule of motivation, more, and pleasure. So dopamine at healthy levels from healthy sources in a person's life is very important. So if porn wasn't in the mix, a person would be driven, motivated into their world to find pleasure from their work, their hobbies, and their relationships. Those are the three categories that I kind of lump that into. So if you enjoy playing basketball, you go play basketball with your friends and you get dopamine from it. If you love your partner and you like having date nights and you watch a movie and you're laughing, you're getting dopamine from movie date night with your partner. If you love your work, I love my work. So when I sit down to work, I can feel my brain light up with flow state, you know, the perfect amount of dopamine, not too much where I just want to work all the time, but enough that I'm getting satisfaction from my life. So that becomes really distorted. And there's thousands of studies when it comes to addiction that the reward center in the midbrain and the dopamine pathways that feed to the frontal lobe, they start functioning differently. They no longer feel good from those sources in the world because they've been hijacked by this very high level stimulus. And so when it comes to addiction, that person's pulled back to the place where they've gotten that those very, very high levels of dopamine. And just one more thing is that it's called the happiness trifecta, where it's the perfect combination of dopamine for pleasure, serotonin, another neurotransmitter for joy and happiness, and oxytocin for connection. So what I want people to do is leave these dopamine addictive compulsive behaviors that are really damaging their brain and get back to wanting to get that happiness trifecta from their life.
Yes, I can see that it makes everything else feel so dilute.
Actually, it makes it feel bad. I call it a 4D dopamine cycle. So when a person has an urge to watch porn, they get a dopamine drip in their brain. This is proven by science. Basically, the thought of porn will get the dopamine flowing just a little, dripping. But then a person has 3 seconds to pivot out of that drip, or it leads towards what I call the dopamine deluge, the flood of dopamine. So even before they watch porn, just when they've decided they're going to, dopamine gets flowing even more towards a flood. Then when they're consuming porn and masturbating, that's a dopamine drowning. That drowns out the brain. It numbs a person. It makes them feel good in the moment. But ultimately, it leads to the fourth D, which is a dopamine deficit in their life. So after consuming porn, it's not like they're just going back to like their regular homeostasis. It's now a new homeostasis of a dopamine deficit and increased cortisol, the hormone for stress. So now you go back into your life and things are worse. You have more anxiety, anger, irritability. You might have depression. You find everybody annoying. And it's because you're in a dopamine deficit state and you will stay there until you get dripping again.
Gosh, it sounds brutal and bleak.
It becomes brutal and bleak for people, which I call that the change point. I try, I have a name for everything here to try to help people understand. The change point is after cycling so many times, it really does become more pain than pleasure. And people can feel that they are addicted, whether I don't really love that term, to be honest, because I think a lot of people, especially when it comes to porn, the idea of porn addiction doesn't resonate with people. You know, they think they have a habit and they can break it until they try. Mm-hmm. But the idea is, you know, that people feel wrapped up in it. They feel compelled to, you know, they start disengaging from their life because of that dopamine deficit state. And they just keep trying to get back to porn. And so when this disengagement starts to happen, you know, their partners know, they're like, why is he checked out all the time? Why is Christmas so difficult for him? And it's because like Christmas would be pleasurable without that cycle, but it's actually a deficit state. So even on holidays and special occasions, they're driven back to get dopamine to offset those negative feelings. It really can become brutal for people. Yes. But it's interesting for a lot of people, they can't see that coming until their brain tips over that threshold.
Mm. And you've explained it so beautifully. And this is just not in general knowledge. It's not in the mainstream.
Nope. Mm. And I accidentally started a YouTube channel. I made one video years back because I learned all of this because someone I care about, I realized, was addicted to porn. And I doubled down on getting more credentials to be, you know, be able to help. So I made one video. It's like 2 minutes and 16 seconds long. It says nothing besides porn damages your brain. Don't watch porn. It's causing all the anguish in your life, basically. And I made it on a different YouTube channel. I've always had a brain YouTube channel. And then like 6 months later, I got a notification. Your video's been viewed millions of times. I'm like, what video is this? And I look and I'm like, it's that heartfelt message on don't watch porn, it's damaging. And the people who showed up with the comments on that video, they're like, please make more of this. Please help us. And that was the beginning of consistent content because I'm like, nobody really knows this. And the people who heard me want help.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. And I'm hoping you're going to give me all the links to all of these places so people can find you. And
yes,
this beautiful
of course.
Content. So we've gone through, and I want you just to say a little bit more about compulsive masturbation, if you will.
Sure. So compulsive masturbation, typically it's paired with porn use. So people don't recognize it as an issue also, but just to frame it for you is that I talked about how when you go into porn, into the screen, there's high levels of dopamine from high levels of mental stimulation. So now you couple that with masturbation, which for most men is high levels of physical stimulation. Now you kind of have a twofer in terms of mental and physical stimulation at higher levels than a person would have in an intimate, connected sexual relationship with their partner. So that is part of the core reason why masturbation becomes compulsive also. But this is what most people resonate with. So when men try, people will say, but men mostly decide they're going to give up pornography. They double down on not watching porn, but it is very difficult for them to stop masturbating. Most people will tell me porn actually wasn't that difficult, but I cannot stop masturbating. So that habit just gets paired with pornography. And to me, the devastating piece is that the images can be internalized. So euphoric recall and fantasy can become almost as powerful as consuming visually and verbally after consistent, frequent, and especially intense use. So now people have a lot of difficulty giving up masturbation because it's coupled with this fantasy or this euphoric recall. So basically it's internalized and that becomes a big challenge. So when I work with people, I tell them you have to give up masturbation if you're going to succeed in the early days of this journey. There might be a place for it for some people later on, but it is a slippery slope. Mm. But that can be a real challenge for people.
Yes, indeed. Of course, I can really see why from everything that you're saying. That's a huge challenge.
It's a very big challenge. And then it becomes even more difficult, I think, when relationships come into play, because relationships get so impacted and they become very dysfunctional, which could take us hours to break down, but we can break down it a little. But it becomes dysfunctional because, you know, you do have addiction on one hand, and unfortunately, addiction leads to defense mechanisms, which usually involve manipulation, lying, justification, rationalization. So this can really make a partner feel like they're overbearing because they're always told their reality isn't true. That happens a lot.
Yeah.
So then partners are like, you know, their intuition is that something's going on, And then that's being disproven over and over when they try to talk to their partner. I feel for everybody. I believe that, you know, it's really not anybody's fault. And I'm sure some people might be mad at me when they hear that, because addiction is, you know, it's maddening for everybody. But it really does create these toxic dynamics between partners in a coupleship. So then what happens to the partner is it's called betrayal trauma. And when a partner suffers from and struggles with betrayal trauma, you know, it really takes an impact on their nervous system and their brain, and then their ability to show up in their relationship. You know, we need secure attachment. So we want to know we can trust our partner. We want to be able to feel safe in our partnerships. That is something that's at the core of marriages and relationships. That breaks down because of all of these defense mechanisms being used. And then, of course, if it was like, you know, alcohol or heroin or even cocaine, something like that, or gambling, which is another behavioral addiction, that's easier on the partner to wrap their mind around. But when it involves sexuality, that hits home so much more personally, even though the underlying mechanisms are the same as those substance abuse issues and other behavioral addictions, but it just tears the relationship apart. But there is a bridge back. There's a bridge back.
Oh, good. Tell us about that. That's really important.
Yeah, it is. So the bridge back, it actually doesn't have to be a long one, but it can be a challenging one for couples because they really do need to get on the same page. So when I speak with women, I really want them to understand this is an addiction. And a lot of times, you know, I don't want to take the power of choice away from a man who's addicted to porn because, you know, their partner sees they're choosing to do this. And, you know, at some point there was choice, but when it becomes a compulsion and an addiction, choice doesn't always enter into the scenario. So, you know, it is a compulsion, a need to go back. So, you know, I want women to know there is an underlying neurological need. And we can talk about that in a minute, but they're driven back to it. It's a compulsion, just like gambling. There's no emotionally healthy person who wants to do this to their partner. But when addiction's in the mix, we already covered, they're not emotionally healthy. There's emotional dysregulation at the core of addiction. So, you know, where that breaks down. So anyways, the bridge back is, you know, if a partner can see this as an addiction and enter into the recovery process as a support for their partner who is addicted, but also thinking about their side of the street. So I want partners to stay on their side of the street at the beginning of a recovery journey. You know, the addicted partner has to double down on breaking the addiction. And I can talk about the steps with that in a minute. The partner has to increase her emotional intelligence and maturity to be able to stay in a difficult journey of recovery and to learn how to set boundaries. Boundaries are everybody's friend in a recovery journey. So the idea is where a partner would say, you know, I'm going to stay in this relationship and support you, but I'm going to do it for 90 days, or I'm going to do it through a planned separation, or I'm going to do it for 6 months, whatever is determined, because then, first of all, the person with the addiction knows I've got this amount of time to get going on my recovery. So I cannot sit around and, you know, I've got to get busy finding the proper help. And then the partner also knows that she can feel safe knowing it might be, you know, maddening for that amount of time, but there should be a way she can see that her partner's moving forward and she's becoming stronger in her own self. So many times, there's so many layers, sorry to keep going, but so many times codependency is within the relationship. And codependency is that the impacted partner really feels like they have to like carry the emotional burden of the person with the addiction. And there might be enmeshment where there's blurred boundaries of the self. Yeah. So when the partner goes, okay, I'm going to figure out who I actually am, and I'm going to put these really strong boundaries around myself, they can start to feel like Wonder Woman. But when they do, that actually allows them to become interdependent in the relationship, which those are the healthy dynamics. So like when the partner cleans up her side of the street and the person with the addiction does, then it's time to get to the beginning of the bridge to heal the relationship.
Beautifully put. Thank you. Thank you. Oh, so tell us about the way that you work with people that actually makes the difference. How do you set people off on their challenge to stop masturbating, stop using porn, heal their relationship by some very honest discussions, some separate healthy boundaries, renewed autonomy, and renewed self-responsibility. I hear all that. What comes next?
Well, what comes first is neurological regulation, because none of that is possible if your brain is stuck in an addicted mode or a betrayed mode. It's very difficult. So the first and foremost, and I feel like the role that I play in the grand scheme of healing relationships and addiction recovery is to be able to provide that neurological piece for people. So the idea is, we know at the core of all of this is a dysregulated brain pattern. I use technology, which is called neurofeedback, to be able to adjust a person's brain performance pattern from where it is as close to, or hopefully at, the optimal performance pattern. And the way that I do that is, the first step is something called a qEEG brain map. It uses EEG, electroencephalogram. So I'm able to see how a person's brain is performing. I'm able to see which areas are dysregulated or have dysfunction and what that dysfunction looks like. It has a pretty consistent pattern for people who are addicted. It has a very consistent pattern for people who feel betrayed. So then the idea is, we know where our starting point is, and then we use technology that shifts their brain back, and they don't have to do anything. They don't have to think about it. They don't have to talk to anybody. That's the unique piece, is that it's passive. It does all the work. It does it through something called operant conditioning. So operant conditioning, most people know about Pavlov's dog. He rang a bell and taught his dogs to drool in the presence of food, and even when he took the food away. Operant conditioning takes that a step further, where with a consistent reinforcement pattern of the healthy brain pattern and not reinforcing the unhealthy pattern unwires, and the optimal pattern begins to rewire in and then eventually hardwire itself in. So to me, that's fundamental, because we know from, like I've already said, thousands of studies, at the core of addiction and betrayal are dysregulated brain patterns. So I help people shift their brains back, and then they're able to show up and have healthier communication. They're able to discuss difficult emotions. They're able to self-regulate. So if a person with an addiction can self-regulate better and be able to quit more easily. So it's imperative that people, you know, train their brains. And that's the first step. But my approach is a neuro-bio-psychosocial. And I think the missing piece is neuro. So I help people regulate their brains, which then helps them to have more self-regulation in their body, more emotional regulation in their mind, and then helps them to show up in their relationships with the proper techniques.
Yes. I mean, it's not just a random thing. No, I get that. It's very specific. What I really love is, it's not taking years and years of therapy. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know it's how long is a piece of string, but how long do you think this will take for somebody? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and actually, I know some people don't love this about the way I talk about this. It makes them a little frustrated. The people who get frustrated are the coaches, the therapists, or people who have been in a recovery journey for a really long time, and they're not succeeding. So to me, like, you know, we set the bar recovery at 90 days, but is it 90 days for every person? No. But I contend 90 days later, you should know you're well on your way. Because if you've been in recovery for 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, decades, which some people are, you haven't addressed the underlying neurological dysregulation, usually. And then the way that I talk about it is, there's pieces to this puzzle. It's very complex. Like I've already told you, I've only shared a few of the pieces. The puzzle is very complex, but there's actual pieces that systematically and consistently apply to people, to all people. These pieces have to be put into the puzzle. And so some pieces are easier or more difficult for any individual, but if you're putting the puzzle pieces in, you know you are, and then you're building momentum. And the way that neurological regulation works is, you're either in an upward spiral or a downward spiral. Well, another cheesy saying of mine is there's no horizontal spiral. But from a neuroscience perspective, it's either you're in a positive feedback loop. So your brain's getting healthier. You're dealing with your emotions better. You're self-regulating more. You're talking to your partner. Positive feedback loop, which will create a flywheel of consistent forward positive change. So if you get that flywheel going, you know it. You feel it on the inside. You know, my clients tell me all the time, like, I don't know how to describe it, but I know I'm on a roll. That's the positive feedback loop. The downward spiral is you stay in a place of struggle and suffering. You're trying, but you're quote unquote failing. I don't love that word either. I think if you have a slip or a relapse, you have to learn from it. If you learn from it, you're always moving forward. And early slips and relapses, you know, are, I believe they don't have to happen, but if they do, I get why they do and you learn. But if late relapses are happening, you haven't figured out your puzzle and it's time to, you know, have somebody teach you what all the pieces are.
Right. This is wonderful. This is wonderful. And I have experience of your considerable success. It's been wonderful to witness in our mutual clients. So thank you so much.
Yeah. I'm so glad to hear that. So I know what I want couples to know, like, if you feel like there's literally no hope, there is hope. And I am an unabashed optimist, but I'm a pragmatic optimist. You cannot sit around and hope that your relationship's going to heal. You have to figure out how to heal it. And it starts with you. And then it starts with the way you interact with your partner. So, you know, there's pragmatic hope, but you have to take the steps that, you know, we know work.
This is brilliant stuff. Tell me where people can find you. Give me all of your links. What's the best place?
Sure. So my website is drtrishlead.com. That's easy enough. It's L-E-I-G-H. I do have a YouTube channel called Dr. Trish Lee. There's over 1,000 videos on porn addiction recovery. There's also videos on erectile dysfunction or sexual arousal dysfunction, because that's the number one pain point for people who consume porn. They end up struggling with sexual arousal dysfunction because of that dopamine dependency. So there's over 1,000 videos there, and they all have a brain hack strategy at the end. So I get emails every day thanking me for helping people because I've helped them recover without ever meeting them, which is such a beautiful gift to me because I am on a mission. So you can go to that YouTube channel if you're looking for a free support and help. It's there for you. And then, of course, if you want more professional support from me and my team specifically, there's a host of different programs on my website. But the primary ways that I help people is I have a digital program, and it's comprehensive. It's big. It's over 100 lessons. It takes about 100 days, but 100 days later, you should be through the woods and know you are, or you should be well on your way and know what you need to work on. Like I've already said, I run a group coaching call in that program. We just did it yesterday. It's one of my favorite things to do. And then when I work with people individually, the first step is a brain map. We see what your brain is doing and what it needs to heal. And I spend an hour individually with people being able to show them, connect all the dots between their history, the way they're using their brain in their life, and how it's showing up in dysfunction. And then, of course, what to do about it.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant. And just give us a news flash about your upcoming book next year.
Yeah. So I am so excited because I just saw accidentally that it is for pre-order on Amazon. I was looking for something else. And of course, I texted it out to my best friends, to all my children. I have 5 children. So it is called Mind Over Explicit Matter. The publisher is slating it and is hopeful that it's going to be the gold standard in porn addiction recovery. It's designed for people who are addicted or struggle with problematic porn use. In it, it has not only the knowledge base, so it's filled with science. I'm so excited because everything that's in my program, everything that I, you know, tout to people, I now have put a scientific resource or many to it. So it's all based on science, but it walks you through the recovery journey, and there's 55 brain hack strategies in there for you to implement. So it's not just a read book. It's a guide to actually start doing in your life and be able to, be able to get rolling. And then there is a section for partners on partner betrayal trauma. It's designed for men and women. So it's going to be a really great resource. So it's on Amazon for pre-order. So I would love for people to go there and, order it.
I'm glad I asked you that.
Yeah, I know. I'm so excited.
Thank you so much. And I hope you'll come back again and talk more about your book in detail nearer the time.
I will. I would love to. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Revolutionize Your Love Life. I'd like to know what has been your biggest takeaway from this conversation. Do take a minute and share this with us and visit us on our Facebook page. You can connect with me personally on my email at heather@heathergarbutt.com. If you can think of someone who will benefit from listening to this podcast, please do share it with them. If you have any feedback on how I can improve it, please do reach out to me, as I'm always keen to learn more. Thank you so much again for listening, and we'll meet again on the next episode of Revolutionize Your Love Life.